views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. We have the power. We have the resources. We have the knowledge. We have the intellect. We have the innovation, and we have the heart to create a world based on parity, practical innovation, and potential. This hit show with Claudette Rowley will take us on a journey so we can explore our planet, our global community, and our opportunity for transformation. We need a cultural revolution that allows us to look past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and to what she calls reality resistance. So tune in. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. And time's up.
Hey, everybody. This is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience what's going well in the world and the opportunity for transformation that's before us. On the second and fourth Fridays of each month, we will have some of the foremost change makers, action takers, and truth tellers helping you re-envision what's possible on our planet and in our world. I'm super excited about today's guest, Ruthie Scholder, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of the Participation Agency. And I'm going to introduce her in a minute, but she and I are going to be talking about, you know, how time is up for women in leadership right now. And she has a lot of great experience in that world as a woman entrepreneur. But let me introduce her. Ruthie's agency, the Participation Agency, has reinvented the agency model. And so they've worked to buck the trends of conventional pay-for-play opportunities in music and art, and started the organization to develop radical experiential campaigns with brands as partners, not clients. And they're focused on the idea of placemaking, which I'm looking forward to learning more about, and pioneered the For Those Who Tour, a series of rest stops for creatives in developing markets. And so they've serving musicians on tour For Those Who Tour, routes culture and arts through emerging markets across the US, reinvigorating cities with world-renowned talent and giving brand partners more organic exposure. So the Participation Agency has an international portfolio of clients, and they've helped drive multi-million dollar campaigns for Fortune 100s, tech startups, and cities seeking innovation through the experiential. Ruthie was also named Inc.'s Millennial CEO Rising Star, and under her leadership, the Participation Agency has won a Clio, an X Award, and consecutive placement on Inc.'s fastest growing private companies list. She's also one of Adweek's disruptors, a list of 39 women spearheading the revolution in advertising, media, and tech. Finally, Ruthie and her co-founder are also behind the Let's Work, a monthly gathering for women to rethink networking and for professional alliances developed in partnership with the Soho House. And she holds an MBA from NYU Business School. Welcome, Ruthie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to chat with you today.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. So great, glad you are here. So the first question I have for you, and this is for those of us who aren't as familiar with your field, like what is, when we say experiential marketing, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so it is actually a phrase that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So the basic way that people understand it are, you know, pop-ups and activations and anytime you're going into a branded live space, a branded live experience, is like the broad term of experiential. The way that my agency approaches it is that we create marketing platforms that are rooted in live experience, but have a big digital amplification strategy around it. So we always have the live piece working with the digital piece to achieve scale, but it always is rooted in some sort of physical experience.
Wow, right? That's really, really fascinating, right? So you're kept the best of both worlds, right? The digital and the live.
Yeah, because yeah. If you only, and also the third pillar of that is influencer, and we always say you have to have the digital, the influencer, and the experiential working together in order to achieve impact. Because if you just have one or two of those three, you're just not going all the way. And experiential is a space in the industry that is very resource heavy. It can be, it can really, really be unsustainable and inefficient if you're not very careful. And so whenever my team is coming up with strategies, we're always looking at it as how do you come up with the right platform that is hitting all of the marks and getting the media attention that it needs to get and driving sales in the way that it needs to and creating the brand awareness and getting people in the door and looking at all of those things working together to make sure that we're coming up with a program that is actually like efficient from a spend and a physical resources perspective, because we're really into sustainability in general, both from, you know, an environmental perspective, but also truly from a marketing outlook. We want our clients to have campaigns that really work to drive progress.
And what inspired you to start the participation agency?
My co-founder and I, we met getting our MBAs at NYU, and she and I both had had our own businesses before business school. And we both had partnerships, first partnerships that didn't work out, and we found each other and worked on some small projects together and knew we wanted to start something. And we were looking at, you know, we're both marketers and we're both entrepreneurs, and I think that we're also like creative and strategic marketers with an eye towards business. So we have a lot of things working for us, and we really sat down and said, what is the place in marketing that's just growing leaps and bounds? And we noticed pretty quickly that brands were just spending, you know, billions more dollars every single year in this place called experiential marketing. And all of these brands knew that they had to do it, but they didn't really know why and they didn't really know how. And so we, you know, we live in New York City and we are very into performance and experiences and things that were going on here, and how do you actually use culture to drive something forward? So we're like, let's use our expertise on all of these levels and come out with something where we think we're bringing these like creative ideas to life in really interesting ways that other people aren't doing. And we were like, if we can actually do this and have some success at the beginning, we think that we'll really be able to build something here. And this is a place of marketing where we feel really, really, really comfortable. And so we did it, and we just, you know, we're a privately owned company. We've never taken any funding. We started off two people sitting around a desk and basically the size of the phone booth I'm taking this call on right now. And we've grown it to, you know, 30 people on the East Coast and some people in LA and San Francisco and projects all over the world, really brick by brick, piece by piece of just coming up with good ideas, executing really well, and bringing results back to our clients.
So truly, truly an organically grown company, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm really proud of, and also happy, because I think that, you know, I see a lot of my peers who took funding or who leapfrogged in certain ways, and oftentimes it catches up to them in ways that they say are very stressful. Not that my job doesn't have its moments of stress, but I think being able to build organically feels really comfortable and just really honestly truly sustainable.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you've had some, you've been able to understand when to move forward and pull back, right? And kind of navigate in the best way possible. It
yeah.
sounds like, you know, to yeah. grow the business. What mm-hmm. and I'm curious with the cult, you mentioned culture, right? That, you know,
yeah.
especially being in New York City, right? And full of experience, full of culture, et cetera. So what's an example of how you really use the culture of where, you know, where you're placed to help move the business forward?
That's a great question. And it's also an interesting question because we do projects all over, and we actually are one of the only experiential team that has projects running for years on end. We're actually immersed in a lot of different city cultures. Like, we had a project in El Paso, Texas for 2 years as part of the music program that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And getting embedded in a city and in a space and being able to invite all different kinds of people into your doors and being able to layer programming on top is so interesting. And honestly, it really works for whatever it is, the thing that you're trying to promote. And we use culture in all different ways. Like, we are on the receiving end of culture, especially in, you know, major markets like New York, where there's so much to take in all the time. And then we also are contributing to culture in a lot of ways, but we're always harnessing the thing that we look for kind of the most is harnessing the energy of people doing really, really cool things around us. And the reason that we ended up in El Paso, Texas for 2 years was that we were scouting cities for a project, and we went there and we spent 2 days there. We were like, you know, the 30-year-olds in El Paso, Texas are doing some really ballsy things, and they're starting amazing businesses. And this whole slew of people had moved from Austin to El Paso to start these really, really, really cool businesses and festivals and crazy bars and just all of these things where they were able to really take risks. And like, I think that that brings a very, very, very special energy to a place. And then the other side of that coin is that we become very immersed with the decision makers in all of the markets, not all, but many of the markets that we're in. So in El Paso, we became friends and built a relationship with some of the people on city council. And they started to trust us, and we really started to understand what they were trying to do. And we always say, like, as New Yorkers, we never go into a new place trying to bring the New York. We really want to come in and understand what's happening in all different cultures and places, and be able to say, okay, we see you, and we see a way as marketers to bring something that feels a little bit unique, maybe a little bit different, but it's going to help get the shine if that's what that market is looking for, or be a support system for the entrepreneurs, or get the influencers like the musicians to stay longer and post about these cities on social. They're all different ways, but we feel like it's really imperative that we go in and we're really respectful of all of these things that are going on, but also that we have a point of view with our programs. And we say, you know, we know from the global level that this program has a consistent and really, really interesting value add. But then we take a look at all of the different local markets and say, what's the right way to show up here that feels authentic and relevant to the people living here or the people coming through?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that's, you know, you articulated so clearly, like, right, you said the best of both worlds, right? You go into a culture, you need to understand it to be successful, right? And to be respectful. And at Definitely. The same time, yeah, yeah. You're working on bringing in something that you think is really going to enhance, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you have to be like really careful. And I think a lot of people, when they're doing things like this, if they're not very, very deliberate, like, it is tone deaf and it can be offensive, and it might not necessarily work. So you have to be sensitive to like the overarching vision and knowing very clearly of what the end goal is and what you want to achieve, but you know, be very open to adjusting based on whatever's happening around you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It reminds me I do a lot of consulting in the culture space in organizations and businesses. And there's a lot of what you're saying is very similar to what, you know, what I'm doing with, you know, going in and really, you know, sensing, assessing, understanding, honoring, right? Before I even say much.
Definitely. And same with me as being in client services, for sure. I actually never thought about it in those words, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, there's a lot of standing back and understanding right first. So absolutely.
But also like holding on to your point of view and being like, mm-hmm. I am here for a reason, and I know my voice and my value, but I have to get the buy-in in all the right ways.
Mm-hmm. Geez, sounds a lot like consulting. Anyway, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna learn a little bit more about the culture of the participation agency itself, and talk more about the leadership, being a leader of this company. So we'll take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Thank you.
coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Claudette Rowley, and we are back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. For those of you just joining us, my guest today is Ruthie Scholder, who is the co-founder and CEO of a really interesting organization called the Participation Agency. So, Ruthie, we've been talking, we've had a really interesting conversation about the role of culture, right, in your work, in going into actual physical, like town culture, city cultures, right, and bringing your experiential work there. So that, thanks for sharing. It's been really interesting to learn more about that. Yeah. And how you streamline that. So, you know, I'm a culture junkie, right? Because I do so much culture change work in organizations. I'd love to learn more about the culture of your organization. What's it like to work for the Participation Agency?
I'd like to tell you. It's interesting because I think that as the company grows, we're intentionally building culture, but also as like the leader and learning about our own culture in ways that is really cool and interesting. We're about 30 full-time people, and we have projects all over the place. So I also have a lot of people traveling all the time. So some days the office is packed and some days, you know, there are 4 people there. So that's been an interesting thing. But my co-founder, Jessica, and I have like very, very true entrepreneurial spirits. And I just realized last year how much that really trickled down to the team. At the beginning of last year, about exactly a year ago, we had a lot of turnover. We let a bunch of people go and then a couple of people quit. And we, you know, we got some interesting feedback from those people who quit. And so we took the like 7 longest standing people in our company, and you know, mixed with some of the top performers, and we brought them into a room and we gave them a heads up and we said, we want to sit with you for 2 hours and we want you to tell us all the ways in which like we're messing up. Like, what are we doing wrong here, basically? Because we just had this kind of like major turnover and we're not really sure where the truth lies between all the stories. Mm-hmm. And their findings were pretty unanimous and really, really, really interesting, where they said, this is an extreme self-starter culture. And they're like, the culture of the company is really amazing, but where you guys, meaning Ruthie and Jessica, me and my co-founder, are messing up is not, you're not doing a good enough job of sussing out the nature of your interview candidates as whether or not they can handle the level of self-starter that our culture is. And they're like, everyone that ends up working here that is a high performer is so happy and is so driven. But when people who come in are not at that level of being comfortable with autonomy, they start to feel weak and then they kind of like spiral. And then these people who are sitting in the room were like, and then because we're so go, 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 and we are also performance driven, we like sniff these people out and then the spiral just continues and they don't make it. Mm-hmm. Which to me was just so eye-opening, because it's kind of like, I think it is kind of a dream for me to have a team of people who really, really can like handle their own and can really like, who take so much pride and value in being performance driven. And you know, we're a lot of our work is conceptual, so some of the performance driven is qualitative, but a lot of it really isn't. A lot of it is just, we believe in the work and we want it to be the best work possible. And we want to work hard to put out products and ideas and digital tools and all of those things that we believe in from start to finish. And they've taken ownership of that. And that is something that I'm so happy about that we have in our culture. Another really big thing for us, and you know, for me specifically, two points is that we have a no drama culture. Like, there's no gossip. Like, gossip is not tolerated. Blame is not tolerated. If somebody is remotely trying to throw somebody else under the bus, Jessica and I like shut that down so hard and so fast, which I think makes it like a really pleasant place to work, because I don't think that that's true of a lot of company cultures. Mm-hmm. And then just final thing that I'll mention, I mean, we have a lot of values, but those are some of my favorites. And this final one that I'll mention is, I'm a huge believer of like owning curiosity, and especially because we're in client services and we work with a ton of giant corporations. Something that I see often is that in these giant corporations, people don't feel like they can own curiosity. Like, if you're in product design or product design, if you're in X group, you're in X group. And I'm a huge believer that people should stay in their lanes, but I also think that it's good to understand, or it's good to question, and it's good to have tons of hobbies and passions and, you know, go out and bring inspiration back to your team. And like, I know for myself that that's been like incredibly beneficial to what I can bring to the company. And so we really encourage people to just be endlessly, endlessly curious. And we support them in a lot of ways to do that.
Thanks for that. Yeah. And I love that. I love that, owning curiosity, because mm-hmm. it's so, like you said, in a lot of large companies, actually curiosity can kind of get you in trouble, right?
Yeah.
It's actually discouraged, and it's like, there's no point in it because it just doesn't go well.
Yeah.
That's exactly. And the no drama is great. Like, there's a great book, called No Drama Leadership that I love.
Yeah.
You know, no gossip, no blame. Drama is actually not a requirement of leadership, right? This idea.
Yeah.
So that's yeah. Awesome.
Or of your office, you know,
like, right.
Your office culture, like, it's just not, it doesn't have to happen if we don't want it to happen.
No, it doesn't. And I also love the story about how you really went to your team, right? And said, yeah. Tell us, like, what are we missing here?
Yeah.
Right? We're something we're not seeing.
Yeah.
And then they told you what the dynamic was. Yeah. That's really,
yeah.
And I see that happen a lot, where it, you know, really well-intentioned leaders, competent leaders, right? There's just something they, from their vantage point, right? They can't quite see. And then they ask their teams and their staffs, and they're like, well, this is what it is. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, we're not in the day-to-day interactions of a lot of these, you know,
right.
A lot of them as peers. And so, you know, somebody can present to me in a meeting and I can get one sense. And then when they're actually trying to collaborate with their other teammates, it's a completely different experience. And it was really helpful feedback. It was like it was just so eye-opening for me, because once they said it, it made so much sense.
Right. It did. I was listening and I had the same, you know, even being completely outside of it, I was like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Right.
Yeah.
It's logical. And I see this a lot in some organizations too, what you describe, where people just kind of demotivate and devolve, really. Like,
yeah.
What happened? Where's the person I interviewed?
Like
50% of what they were, right? And you can't figure it out.
Yeah. And we had somebody who, when she left, she was just like, this place is so bad to work. You know, she was not doing well in her role and not flourishing. And she was pretty upset about it. And, you know, she sent an email about it. I was like, I don't know. I actually really like working here. Like, I actually think this is a really great place to work. So interesting.
That is really interesting. And I'm curious, what have you, you know, as a leader, what have been some of the top things you've learned, right, in leading this company, co-leading this company? Just yourself as a leader.
My own leadership style.
Yeah.
So much. I think I spent the first year with my executive coach talking about just that. And, you know, she really pushed me to continue to define what kind of leader I want to be and how I want to show up. And it's interesting because my co-founder and I have different leadership approaches, where Jessica takes more of a managerial approach and I take more of a mentorship approach. So she's more sort of like tactical in the day-to-day, and I'm more, how can I grow you? How can we have conversations where you see me as an empathetic leader? How can I understand some, you know, interpersonal things that are affecting your career that I can help point out to you to help you grow? And that's a really, really, really comfortable place of leadership for me, because this other side of this, having a very self-started culture, me personally, like, I don't love to manage people on day-to-day stuff. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I'm a compartmentalized thinker, and I like to kind of like do my own work and have check-ins, but not get into the weeds with people. But I love mentorship, and I love talking about, you know, how do you feel you're doing, or like, what did you learn in that meeting by what that, how did you read between the lines of what that client was saying? And trying to honestly just hone the softer skills has been my general in it with my people approach. And then, you know, I am sort of like the protector of the company and the gatekeeper and the guardian in a lot of ways. And so for me, for my own evolution as an entrepreneur, there's been a lot of, as I get more mature and more sophisticated, and as my business grows and I feel more, I'm in less of a hustle mode, and I'm like, okay, we're going to keep the lights on. You know, as we become more and more and more successful, I've been able to be hardcore about the boundaries, but to be less hard. So how can you be like a soft, hard leader where like people don't mess with you, but you don't have to feel so wound up about certain things all the time, has been something that I've just worked on, or not even worked on, but as I grow in the role and as the company becomes more and more successful every year, things that stressed me out 2 years ago don't stress me out anymore. And that's doesn't mean they're not important. It just means I figured out a way to let them affect me less. And so that's been amazing for my own leadership, because I don't get riled up about things that aren't worth getting riled up over.
Yeah, it sounds like more discernment, right, with experience.
And a lot of that comes too of like, I have a CFO, like I have people now in roles where like I can also pass off some of those things that were stressful for you before.
Right.
But yeah, it's discernment, and it's also just like managing emotions and knowing that like I'm looking at a situation very specifically because I'm bringing my own thoughts and feelings into it, but that's not necessarily in alignment with what the facts are. And two other people in the room could read the situation differently. And so I'm trying to say, you know, if something's really stressing me out, I try to take a minute and say, what are three other ways that somebody can look at the situation? And am I seeing it the right way, or am I seeing it in a way that's being led by my emotions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really great questions. Everyone who's listening, right? What are three different ways we could look at the situation? I mean, some really great coaching questions in there. So thank you for sharing those. We're gonna take a quick break. This is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to The Brilliant Ultimatum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Steffen each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Right now, ask yourself, how far are you from your dream? Are you closer today than yesterday? Entrepreneur and personal coach Deborah Rothschild brings the wit and wisdom to transform you into a new dynamic you. Tune in to the Deborah Rothschild Show, Developing a Dynamic You. To learn more about Deborah, visit thedeborahshow.com. That's the D-E-B-R-A show.com.
Tune in live every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Yeah.
coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. I'm here with my guest today, Ruthie Scholder, who is the CEO of the Participation Agency. So Ruthie, before we dive back into our really fun conversation, how can listeners learn more about you and your company?
They can go to our website. It's thisisthepa.com. And I am Ruthie Scholder on LinkedIn. And Ruthie, R-U-T-H-I-E, at thisisthepa.com.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. So, and they have a great website. I like your website.
Thank you. Yeah,
very
thank
fun.
You.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I'd love to ask you more about is what is it from your perspective, some of the biggest misconceptions about women in business right now? What have you noticed as a woman leader?
Yeah. I think that there's still a misconception that women don't help each other. I don't think that that's true anymore for most of us. And I think that for those who it is still true for, we can like bring them over to the other side pretty easily. Mm-hmm. So that's a really, really big one that I think self-perpetuates in a very dangerous way. Other misconceptions are that, you know, just because we're talking about it means the problems are getting solved.
Right.
I don't think that that's true. Yeah. I still think that there's just so much, you know, middle-aged male domination happening in so many of these companies and making decisions at so many of these roundtables, and you know, it would be great to get to a place where we don't even have to talk about women's issues. But for right now, I think it's really important to know that like every day showing up is still important and is still in a lot of ways, not to be over dramatic, but it is still just a protest in itself to be a woman every day in a leadership role in a company trying to advance your career. Like there are battles every day. And I think it's just important to understand that and to recognize that. And for us as, you know, women interacting with other women, to also just keep remembering that and knowing like, I think we all want the same goals, which is to advance and to be supportive and to shatter some of these boundaries and ceilings together, but to also stay empathetic and conscious of knowing like everyone has a story. And, you know, there's a lot of ways and a lot of companies where we're being held back just by the, you know, systemic company culture or the nature of your department and, you know, your role historically and what that looked like in that company. And just, we just constantly be having to do our best to, I think, see each other and to know that like it's a challenge every day and we just got to keep at it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I really, your point about just because we're talking about the issues doesn't mean things are changing.
Yeah.
It's such a key point. And, you know, it's, you know, and I also, when I was thinking about this question, you know, I thought, you know, I look forward to the day when we hear questions like, what are some of the biggest misconceptions about men in business, right? Yeah. Not just women in business.
Right. Right.
It's not just business and women. It's like
right.
Men in business and women in business.
Right.
Or just
right.
Business, right? Because right. Everybody's, right.
Right.
It's just talk doesn't mean anything is functionally changing. And that, you know, and you mentioned that every day it seems like there's something, right?
Oh, yeah.
Extra challenges, right?
Yeah, or even just like, you know, I don't know if you find this in your consulting business, but just as a female, you know, agency owner just insisting on my rate every time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Knowing and getting pushback and knowing that there are male agency owners making more than I am from the same clients. Like I know that. They know that I know that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And just insisting and owning my worth and not backing down. Like it's all part of it. And you know, going to meetings with men, I just recently, last week, had a meeting with a client who I actually adore, who does really great work, and he just kept talking about all the men in his circle, and I had to be like, cool. So which are the badass women you're working with right now, and can you tell me about those? Like,
yeah.
Just constantly being like, don't forget, like, this has to be part of the conversation, and if you haven't invested in women founders recently, like, you gotta go out and find them, you know, like, mm-hmm. just being the voice all the time and pointing out things that men I think are based in equality that aren't. Just in when things come up, I think in casual conversation, I'm not always so militant, but in my own way of how I know to get buy-in from people in a way that feels safe for them, I do this around women's issues all the time, and they appreciate it, because I think that they're, you know, they have blinders on because that's how the world has worked for them.
Right.
And they just don't see it because they don't see it. They're not trained to see it. So now that I'm trained to see it, I point it out in ways that I think will resonate and actually be effective for making change in that one person's opinion.
And that, yeah, and thank you for doing that. And, you know, there's you have your style and your way of handling and interacting with people. But in general, what are some ways we can deal with some of these misconceptions, you know, and correct them? What have you found?
I mean, it's easy for me to say because I own my own company and because, like, I'm a very type A militant feminist Aries, you know, like, it's easy for me to lean into and to own because it just is. It's my personality. And I see women in my client companies and, like, I don't know if I were them in their situations, how differently I would be able to do it. Like, it's really hard. There's a lot of challenge. And to just say, I have to make myself heard at every meeting or else, you know, I have to talk just to be heard. Like, I don't necessarily think that's the right approach either. And that is something that I hear where they're like, well, I have to just say something, even if it's repeating or, you know, it's not the right thing, just because I don't want them to think I'm not contributing. Like, I'm not sure that's the solve, but the biggest thing for me, and I mentor a bunch of younger women in some of these big companies, and I do think that this isn't transcend age, I'm about to say, is just remembering that a lot of the things that you think are reality are actually just like old patterns that you read about in like toxic magazines in the 80s and 90s mm-hmm. that told you that this is how a woman was supposed to be, and this is what makes a woman, you know, be appreciated and respected. And I think that a lot of that old patterning just has to, just knowing that it's patterning and knowing it's messed up, I think is honestly the first step. And just being like, okay, well, just because that is how this has been done before, does that mean this is the way it has to be done now? And what is the right way? And how can I make, if I'm not taking leaps to push my team and my company there, how am I taking baby steps? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for me? And how can I do it in a way that feels like I'm a progressive human, but doesn't make me feel so scared that I'm going to get fired? Like, I think it kind of comes into that root of just like gaining a little bit of confidence and gaining a little bit of clarity and space from the daily and from the challenge to say, what even got me here? And how can I start to discern what is real versus what is just programming from when I was 16 and reading, you know, Cosmopolitan.
All right. That is such a key point, you know, and I thank you. I hadn't really ever thought about it that way, but how much is of what we expect of ourselves as women or we think is expected of us comes from this old patterning that maybe nobody actually cares about anymore.
I think people care. Like, I still think that's the expectation. I just think mm-hmm. it's on us to pave the new way. And the patterning creates blocks in our conscious and in our subconscious of feeling like, you know, I'm not worth it, or, you know,
right.
I have to please that man in the boardroom in whatever mm-hmm. way so that he likes me, you know, like, it's sort of all intertwined. And it's just about starting to unpack it to even be able to say, oh, that's why I didn't speak up, or that's why I talked too much, or that's why I thought I had to wear this outfit. You know, like, it all kind of starts to go together and build on each other once you start to say, what's blocking me now from breaking through this?
I had an experience, I think it was about 5 years ago, roughly, and I was went to a meeting, it was a networking group, and I won't say what it is because it's nationally known, just to, you know, maybe become a member. And I was talking with another woman there. There were more men than women. And it was before the networking meeting had started. So we had a cup of coffee, right? And she and I ended up sitting down for a few minutes. And she had a really interesting job. So I was asking her questions, really interested in the conversation. She suddenly says to me, "We should stand up like the men are."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, what year is it?
Yeah.
You know, like it was very like, and I don't know how we ended up sitting down. It was just very organic, right? We just, you know, down and,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, okay. Cause clearly she felt strongly about it. I could tell.
Yeah.
And she got up and went and stood with the men and chatted. And I thought, wow, why should it matter that you and I are sitting here for 5 or 10 minutes?
Right.
Right. Not a half hour. I mean, nothing long, you know?
Yeah.
But you were talking, that just popped to mind. I'm like, talk about patterning. Wow.
Yeah. And why is that even an expectation? And does there even need to be an expectation around this? And is it a valid expectation? Like all of it.
Right.
That. Yeah.
And clearly she was concerned, you know, you can tell. Yeah.
And like, but all of that, like it's systemic to the cultures we put ourselves in, but it's also just systemic to our brains at this point.
Yeah.
And if you don't take a very proactive stance with yourself to try to question those things, then it's just going to keep going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait, you know, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to touch back on this really interesting topic that's a favorite of mine of questioning our own beliefs. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
If you've ever had a broken heart, you know how painful that can be and how long it can sometimes take to heal it. I'm Megan Edge, author of The Heart's Journey, Healing Hearts, Oracle Cards, and Guidebook, published with Balboa Press and Hay House. In The Heart's Journey, I share with you my own heartbreak and how I healed it through the beautiful hearts that found me in nature. From taking photographs of these hearts for myself, I've created this beautiful toolkit, which includes the guidebook, which has my story, how to work with oracle cards as a healing tool, and the story of each of these hearts as they cross my path. I've also created a beautiful journal. There's a pen, a bookmark, and of course, the 42 Healing Hearts Oracle Cards. You can order The Heart's Journey, Healing Hearts Oracle Cards, and guidebook through my website, meganedge.ca, through Balboa Press, Amazon, and many other places online or your local shops. I look forward to hearing about your heart's healing.
This ain't your daddy's toolbox. Are you ready to empower yourself with the right tools to support your body from the inside out? Join the Oil Lounge as they guide you in building your wellness toolbox of essential oils and plant-based products. It's time to ditch the toxins we're exposed to on a daily basis. The Oil Lounge is committed to sharing the value of essential oils. They offer simple and easy ways to use these life-enhancing products without breaking the bank. Are you ready to start building your everyday wellness toolbox? Visit theoillounge.com today.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi this is Claudette Rowley, and you are back on Brilliance Ultimatum. So here with my guest, Ruthie Scholder. And Ruthie, we were just talking about, I mean, you said something so important about questioning our own beliefs as women in business and women who are leaders, right? That there are these paradigms that we live with, that we've maybe been socialized in, and the how important it is to actually question them in our own mind, right?
Definitely.
Definitely. I'm curious, what's an if you can remember, what's an example of one that you ended up questioning in your own leadership as a woman?
Oh my God, so many. I'm doing a lot of personal work right now around like unblocking beliefs I have about women and money. And my mom was a single mom, and a lot of the women in our community were single moms, and just I'm realizing now that I didn't have, well, I realized a long time ago that I didn't have a lot of women career role models, but that I also, I didn't have a lot of women who were successful in their own right financially. And so it's been a huge block for me that I'm just realizing now of something that's been holding me back. And so I'm really diving into that. I do this manifestation workshop, digital platform called Expanded, or To Be Magnetic, I think is the official name. And so I'm doing it through there, and it's been really interesting because I realized for me that blocks around money are very directly linked to feminism. Mm-hmm. And so as I grow into that part of my life, needing to just dive into any kind of beliefs that I had of like a woman can't build a company and sell it for tens of millions of dollars, because that just isn't what I saw growing up. And so I'm really taking a deep dive into that one. Other beliefs that were sort of like hoisted on us, but I think we've had to like just overthrow, not even question, are, we have great relationships with a lot of our clients and truly like love them, and we're thought partners with them. And we had one a couple of years ago who would like come to New York and have meetings with us, and his daughter was living in New York, and he'd like bring his daughter to the office and be like, can you or someone on your team like watch my daughter while I go do meetings?
Oh my gosh.
And for a little while we were like, because we like want to make our clients happy, we were like, sure. And then I was just like, that is so messed up. Like, you would never ask a male agency owner to do that. But, like, you just wouldn't. Like, that would never be a thing that would happen ever. And right. I'm just like, that's messed up. And no, but as women, and as I'm a mother, and as I love kids, and as caretakers and caregivers and all of it combined, people pleasers, like we want them to say yes and all these things, like we just have to be like, step back, unravel this. It doesn't mean you're not maternal. It doesn't mean you're not good at your job. It doesn't mean you're not good at service. It just means this is inappropriate. And the answer is no.
Exactly. And that's long and short of it.
Yeah. If you're not going to ask that guy, don't ask me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's a great example of that person's, that client's, right, unconscious bias, most likely, right? Oh, they're women.
Totally.
Yeah, can you watch my daughter? Right.
100%. And like, she's a great kid. I like hanging out with her. It's just like, it's inappropriate.
Right. Right. That's a place of business. Right. It's not appropriate.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing some examples. Yeah, of things, and those are great ways, right? We can start questioning our own beliefs. Like, okay, what if this is not appropriate, right? What is this really about?
Yeah.
What is this person communicating to me, right, through this kind of messaging? What's really happening?
Yeah, and what I'm learning too, because I do a lot of inner work, and it really helps me in my business life as I become more like self-aware of what. Mm-hmm. Is blocking me, like whenever I feel like I'm hitting a wall in any capacity of personal, professional, anything, I'm starting this practice of saying, okay, what was I raised to believe? Because there's always a reason and there's always a way out, but if you don't figure out what that is, you can't transcend beyond it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just become a huge part of my practice to get into those kinds of things, and to like figure out the hard things that are completely below your level of consciousness, that come out through like meditation and stuff like that, and asking yourself really hard questions. And it's fascinating. And once I get those aha moments, I'm like, oh, I see it and that makes perfect sense. And now I'm not going to do them anymore because I get it. And I'm done, you know, being held back. I'm done holding myself back.
Yeah. And it was, you know, when you were mentioning about, you know, yes, a woman can, you know, create a $10 million company and sell it. And it was reminding me of, just, you know, realizing if I guess for some reason I'd never really internalized this, but, you know, it was until around 1970, right, that women couldn't go out and get all their own credit cards and run all their own money and everything.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh. And the person who was speaking about this point was, you know, we expect women to hold all this power through money, which is great, except only a couple of, you know, a couple of generations, three generations or so of women, right, have actually been able to do that.
Yeah.
It was not this hundreds and thousands of years of experience, right, of having totally. Money and power and property and all that. So totally. I think that's really, and so here we are only 50 years later, right?
Yeah.
And which isn't much time in the collective consciousness to really be shifting these beliefs, right? So I love that you do this internal personal work, right? It's such a yeah. great, quick way to shift our beliefs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's made all the difference.
Yeah, it really has. So we only have a couple minutes left on the show, about a minute left. And so what, you know, what's one thought you'd really love to leave listeners with today?
Wow, it's such a broad question.
Maybe aspiring, you know, women who are aspiring women leaders.
I think try to get as close to your authentic voice as humanly possible. And that means, you know, if you want to speak up, speak up. If say the thing you want to say, do the thing you think is right. It'll pay off for you, even if it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It'll end up paying off for you. There's a reason why you're being called to do or not do or say or not say certain things or spend time with certain people, et cetera, and go with it. And if you don't understand why you're doing it now, it'll reveal itself. But try to get as close to your authentic self as possible, because it'll pay. I mean, I could be corny and say, because there's only one you and you're the best at that, which is true. But my more practical side is because it'll pay off, because then you'll get to really own your own voice. And that is ultimately is going to be the thing that gets you the career recognition, makes you stand out. And that's my advice.
Thank you. That is a wonderful note to wrap the show up on. So thank you so much for sharing. Ruthie, thank you for sharing your expertise, your journey with us today, about being a woman leader in this really wonderful company, the participation agency that you co-founded. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to thank all the listeners today. Thank you as always for tuning in. We always have a great time. Please join me the second, fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Tune in next time on TransformationTalkRadio.com for powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and move beyond the mindset of division. Each show, Claudette strikes right at the heart of the matter and looks past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and what she calls reality resistance. We just need the will. For more information about the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, visit culturalbrilliance.com and join the cultural revolution. See you next time.